Welcome to the THA-TDH Weekly COVID-19 call. My name is Karen. I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Chris Clark. Chris, you may begin.
Thank you, Karen, and welcome everyone to our every other week call with the Tennessee Department of Health. As usual, we have Dr. Amelia Keaton and Dr. Mary Margaret Phil with us today from the Tennessee Department of Health, and appreciate their time and the updates that they're going to provide. So let me turn it over to Dr. Keaton and Dr. Phil.
Hi, good morning, everybody. This is Mary Margaret Phil with the Tennessee Department of Health. Just a few updates we wanted to provide for everyone from the general perspective. So first, many of you might have seen we pushed out a health alert network message earlier this week. This was a few general updates. The first topic was just around ensuring folks have access and an understanding of all of the data that's now available on our website. We have added information on the number of currently hospitalized patients total and at the state level only, and available hospital capacity, just looking at floor beds, ICU beds, and ventilators, again, just at the statewide level, to our website. We also just wanted to redirect clinicians to some of the resources that we have available for their patients after being diagnosed with COVID, after being tested, and then for them to potentially share with their contacts. We recognize that, you know, there's often a delay of a day or so, sometimes longer, depending on the situation, between when frontline ordering clinicians have results back for their patients before public health is always able to get a hold of those folks. And so to the degree that, you know, our healthcare partners can help be advocates of the public health messaging that we are sharing, we greatly appreciate it. And these one-pagers in general have all of the information that folks need to know about isolation or quarantine requirements, what constitutes a close contact, et cetera. So to the degree that we can incorporate that information into people's workflows as they're being given their test results, that would be great. And then there's also some information about the availability and allocation of remdesivir, you know, which has been a close collaboration with THA and the department and Vanderbilt, including the current criteria to qualify and the red cap survey to complete if you think you have a patient or there's a patient in your hospital system that you think might qualify. And then lastly, two more topics, one around the new multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children that's been identified across the country, the criteria that we're tracking in Tennessee and how to report those cases to the Department of Health, as well as information about the Battelle critical care decontamination system that the state has procured that's being used to decontaminate N95s and how hospitals can utilize that mechanism for free through a fairly straightforward registration process. So just wanted to make sure that everyone had that information. That's also all linked on our website. So if you missed the HON or want to redistribute it, it's available in the healthcare provider section at the very bottom of the webpage. I do just want to provide some general updates on trends statewide. There's been a lot of focus nationally, understandably, on a rising number of cases in many states. You know, we certainly are seeing an increasing number of cases in Tennessee. Fortunately, not yet quite to the degree that some of our partners in Arizona or Texas or South Carolina or other states are, but the day is still young. So, you know, there's obviously a lot contributing to this. To some degree, an increase in cases was not surprising as people are out and about more and interacting more. I think, however, we're certainly seeing that, you know, many states around the country, some jurisdictions in Tennessee are, you know, forging ahead with sort of reopening phases. And unfortunately, you know, many people in the general public are not always abiding by some of those important social distancing practices that are really so critically important to continue to try to control the spread of this virus, you know, as we look to reopen and sort of get back to a new normal. So, you know, we really rely heavily on our healthcare partners to help, you know, push some of that messaging. So to the degree that you can help be our voices in your communities. You know, people often trust their own doctors and healthcare providers, you know, at the highest level. Those are some of the most sacred relationships that exist. And so, you know, those messages of staying home if you really don't have to go out, messages around wearing masks to protect, you know, others in your community, to protect your families, you know, trying to maintain physical distancing whenever you're in public to the degree possible, being very dedicated and diligent about hand hygiene and alcohol-based hand rub and all of those things that, you know, we've all been saying for months and I know grow weary of saying. Now is the time that I think we have to lean in even more heavily to those messages, because unfortunately they're not being heard or they're not being abided by in some areas. And I think that's certainly largely what's driving some of this spread that we're seeing. You know, we are closely monitoring this across the state. There are certainly some parts of the state that are having a higher number of cases more quickly than others. I will say that, you know, we are rapidly mobilizing more staff. You know, one of our public health regions just is in the process of onboarding 25 new staff to help support case investigations and contact tracing. We've set up a call center to help with case and contact monitoring that's employing hundreds of staff. So, you know, we are working to ensure that public health can continue to provide the same degree of follow-up and information gathering that's needed for all of these cases as they're identified. But I think we also have to be realistic that, you know, as we're seeing in some of our partner states, that there gets to be a point where there's a number of cases that becomes really challenging for any community to successfully control. So we appreciate you helping to be our voices in this important time. We'll continue to update all of our data daily at 2 p.m. And as you're well aware, you know, there's lots of granular data by county, by public health region available on the website for you to see what the trends are locally in your area. You know, along those lines, we've also seen an increase in the number of hospitalized patients. I think as of yesterday, we were up to 482 hospitalized COVID patients in Tennessee. That's still only about 5% of all hospitalized patients statewide. So I think keeping that in perspective is important, but, you know, all the more reason that we greatly appreciate the data that's being put into HRSA every day, because that's really important to give us those real-time trends of what's happening in terms of hospitalization statewide as we closely monitor that in conjunction with just the general case trends. I think those are the big updates that I have. Of course, we'll be happy to take questions at the end, but I'll turn it over to Dr. Keaton if she has other sort of more specific HAI or infection control updates.
Yeah, so not a whole lot from my side of things. I just wanted to share a few data points surrounding long-term care facilities, because I know there may be some of those facility representatives on the call, and this is also something that I know is relevant to acute care hospitals. So we, as of this morning, have identified 164 facilities in the state of Tennessee that have had at least one case of COVID-19 among staff or residents. You know, that number continues to increase every week. We know that some of those facilities have successfully kind of come across on the other side and no longer have any cases, but you know, as we start to see increased numbers in the community, as people move around more and go out more, I think there is reason, or, you know, obviously a concern that that will translate into more cases in our long-term care facilities. To try to help with that, my team has been trying to ramp up our infection prevention and control capacity. We've brought on two new certified infection preventionists, one in the Mid-Cumberland region, one in the Knoxville area. We are continuing to staff our healthcare-associated infections inbox, which is hai.help@tn.gov. We're doing that 7 days a week, so obviously if you have any questions, concerns, you know, in any healthcare setting, we will do our best to try to answer those. And in some cases, we can do a kind of a full infection prevention and control assessment. We've certainly gone on site on some in some settings. Other times, we've spoken by phone, and that has been sufficient. So just want to make sure that folks are aware of that resource. A few other things that were released this week from CDC and other sources. One is kind of summarizing what we have known or suspected for quite some time, which is that the risk for severe illness related to COVID-19 increases with age. I think we had, the messaging previously had been that those that were 65 were at the highest risk, but I think now they've done some good work showing that as people age, even if you're not hitting that 65-year-old mark, the risk for severe illness is higher. There's also been some data released this week that pregnant women tend to have more severe cases of COVID-19 when infected, and so all the more reason to pay attention to some of those just basic practices that Dr. Phil already mentioned, including hand hygiene, wearing a mask if you go out in public, trying to limit your activities if at all possible, particularly if you're in one of those higher risk groups, such as pregnant women or people with underlying comorbidities like heart disease, obesity, hypertension, type 2 diabetes, and those sorts of things. It's just not worth it if you can avoid going out and exposing yourself to COVID-19, because we are still seeing those severe outcomes. I think aside from that, though, I don't have any other big updates, and so we can turn it back over to you, Chris. Or excuse me, one second. It sounds like Mary Margaret's got one.
Sorry, I do have one more update or sort of request, I guess. We've heard anecdotally from several of our local health departments that they're seeing an increasing number of patients coming to the local health departments for pre-procedure testing. I know that that's a requirement that many hospitals have put in place. Unfortunately, in many instances, patients are showing up saying they need their test results within, 24 to 48 hours, and that's, not always possible. Most of our health departments are not sending specimens to the state lab now. They're sending them to a commercial laboratory, so we don't have nearly as much control over turnaround time as we're able to do with prioritizing samples at the state lab. But irregardless, healthy patients with no symptoms and no exposure would not be prioritized at the state lab for testing, as we're really trying to reserve that for outbreaks and high-risk settings. I think many of these patients are having procedures done at outpatient surgery centers or, private practices. It's not necessarily part of large hospital systems. But to the degree that we're able, we would really encourage hospital systems to, support any of that testing that might be happening through their medical groups or affiliated surgery centers, to handle that testing themselves. We're really, as much as we can, trying to reserve our health departments for patients that don't have access to a primary care doctor, or patients that, otherwise might fall through the cracks and not be able to obtain testing. Certainly someone that, needs sort of urgent access to testing, but screening of patients for procedures is not really the intention of those testing sites. So just a sort of request, if we're able to provide support through the larger systems that are doing their own testing for those types of efforts, we would greatly appreciate it. So I think that's all we have. We'll turn it back over to you, Chris, if you have any other updates or to open the floor for questions.
Great. Thank you both. Operator, we can open up the queue for questions at this time.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. You will be muted before the first question is announced. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone.
Thank you, operator. While we're waiting for questions in the queue, let me just pose a question to either of you who might have insight into this. Nationally, we're seeing a lot of the increased cases attributed to younger populations and 20 to 40-year-olds, specifically in the news media. Do we have insight into the Tennessee cases for the last week or two and the uptick? Do we know if it's in the younger population, or do we think it's more related to our ongoing testing across the board or in nursing homes?
Yeah, so, we are looking at our age data. We typically look at it by week because there's so much sort of fluctuation in data from day to day. We see big drop-offs over the weekend. It helps to average out some of those things by a week at a time. I can say over the last few weeks to months, we certainly have seen an increase in the number of cases among children under the age of 18. We've also seen an increase in cases among sort of the 20 to 39 age group. And we've seen that our number of cases among older Tennesseans has decreased since the beginning of the pandemic, likely due to those folks perhaps taking more precautions and staying home. I think undoubtedly some is probably due to increased testing and increased testing access. However, we've also seen that our percent positive tests has increased as well. So in the last 2 weeks, I don't want to quote you wrong, so let me look very quickly. In the last couple of weeks, we've had slightly over 8% of our tests be positive. Previously, we were sitting at kind of the upper 5%, low 6%. You know, I think the national threshold that really, you know, garners higher level of concern is 10%. So, we're still below that, but I think it's difficult to attribute increased case numbers just to increased testing when you're also seeing increased percent positivity of tests.
Thank you. Operator, do we have questions in the queue?
Yes. We have a first question from Curtis Powell.
Yes, we have a long-term care facility at our acute rehab hospital. We also have the long-term care facility. We know that weekly testing is going to be starting, and we will be glad to do that. But the question came up, which was rather ambiguous in the FAQ that was sent out, regarding if somebody misses a testing cycle. Do they have to be tested positive before they come back, or can they be tested the day that they return or at that next testing cycle? And we had two statements in the FAQ that conflicted with each other, so we just need some better definition as to that. If an employee goes on a vacation, they miss the testing cycle, do they have to have it before they come back?
Yeah, hi, this is Amelia Keaton. So I would have to defer to our regulatory partners on kind of the nuances. I do know that in the past when that question has come up, their response has been that employee should be tested before returning to work. They should not be waiting until that next testing cycle just because, particularly if they are off and they travel, there's, probably a heightened risk that they were exposed to somebody with COVID-19. And so I believe their answer has been that employee should be tested prior to returning to work. And then also, if they fall outside that 7-day window, they would need to be tested again with the next cycle too.
Got it. Thank you very much.
And as a reminder, if you do have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone.
So, again, as we're waiting for another question, one question that came up this past week on some other member contact was, and you alluded to the increased staffing that you've put in place, both in specific regions as well as your call center, around contact tracing and follow-up with positive cases. Is the department currently doing a phone call and follow-up with every positive case for education and contact tracing, or the majority?
That is the goal. I think the speed with which that happens is probably a little bit variable depending on the part of the state where people live. We've certainly seen that some of our metros and some jurisdictions have really had a big bolus of cases in the last week or so, and so that leads to potentially a slightly longer lag before they're contacted by public health, but that is still the intention. I will say we're working on some contingency planning after speaking with some colleagues in other parts of the country and learning from their experiences, where we might start utilizing robocalls or a text message or an email to cases basically right off the bat as soon as they're identified to at a minimum inform them of their case status, which hopefully they already have been by their treating provider, ensure they know the sort of isolation requirements, and then to do a pretty quick and dirty assessment as to whether or not we would consider them to be a high-risk case and then prioritize those for interview by public health and perhaps turn over interviews of the lower-risk cases to either a centralized group or just have them be a lower priority for public health to interview. So there's a lot of work ongoing there, but right now the goal is still that every case be interviewed by public health.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there additional questions, operator?
We have no questions in queue.
Thank you. And one last question from my standpoint. You know, THA is looking at kind of how do we continue to support your messaging and support our hospitals in their messaging to their communities around social distancing and staying at home whenever possible and that type of thing. Just as a reminder to folks on the call, are there specific posters in multiple languages or a specific location for the resources that you think best convey this information?
That's a great question, Chris. We can, there's a bunch of different resources on our website and that we've linked to. I can certainly pull together sort of the high yield ones and certainly share them with you. If you can share those with members, that would be great to have them, you know, post in their facilities or in their communities to the degree that we can just continue to reinforce this everywhere. That would be really wonderful.
That would be great. We'd be happy to do that. And also, if you, you know, I don't know where the state is in terms of PSAs or other types of, you know, short video blogs from, you know, a variety of, I don't know, we've even talked about country music stars or young people if we're trying to message those groups, or didn't know if y'all had plans to sort of put out any additional kind of campaign messages.
Yeah, there's certainly been discussion about that with the Unified Command Group. I'm not in the weeds on all of those details, but I know there's ongoing planning about the best messaging strategy.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, unless there's another question in the queue, I'll just turn it back to Dr. Keaton and Dr. Phil to sort of close out if there's any other points that you would like to make or share.
I don't think so. Just as always, we greatly appreciate everyone's hard work and again, appreciate you helping to be our voices in your communities across the state, you know, as we continue to try to do our very best to control this ongoing spread statewide.
And also just thank you, everybody, in general, for the work you do. I know this is exhausting. I know that people are probably getting pretty close to burnout, and I know that I certainly am tired, and I know that the folks on the phones who are on the front lines have got to be even more so. So just thank you, and please know that what you're doing matters and that we really appreciate you.
Thank you, Beth. We appreciate you and your leadership as well. Given the increase in cases that we're seeing across the state, we are going to continue to do this call every 2 weeks. With the department, so I believe that, if my calendar's right, I believe that we'll make the next call on July the 9th, and THA will send out information to register for the two July calls, as we've done for this series in the past. So in the interim, if anything changes, as always, the department will be in touch with us through both TEHON alerts, or if something dramatically changed that we needed to, we would schedule a special call. So with that, we'll close out today's call, and we thank you all for your time and hope you have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.